With regard to how you share this with your family, so you're right, you don't want to scare kids, but there do have to be limits. We used to have learning in our house Shabbos morning, and the deal was, you know, if we learn till Thursday night, till 2-3 in the morning, and Friday morning we have class again, so the deal was, I usually get up for the learning, but on weeks that I don't get up, I leave a bag tied to the door. And if you see a bag tied to the door, so that means that Shabbos morning we don't have learning. Fine, comes one Shabbos morning, and I didn't get up for the learning. And one of the guys who went down Masikin came really early. He assumed I down Masikin. So he came long before the time. He came like 7:15 or 7:30. That was one of those summer weeks when where Nate was really early. So he comes at like 7:15. He's finished davening, and he assumes I daven too. He knocks on the door. And one of the kids gets up and opens the door. So my wife and I are sleeping, and the front door is open. So he asks, this was one of the guys from the Mahon. So he asked my son, where's Abanima? So my son said, they're sleeping. So he said, okay, then I'll wait outside. So he closed the door, and he sat, took a safer, sat outside and learned. Okay, 15 minutes later, I get up, and my son tells me he knew the guy by name. This was a guy who came to us for 2 years straight every Shabbos morning. So he tells me so-and-so is outside. So I said, really, how do you know? So he said, because I opened the door for him. So then I showed him that I was really, really upset, because he had to understand that he crossed a certain line. He opened the door when his parents were asleep. So then I let him have it. That was like... I yelled at him. He knew I was serious. If you don't yell often, then when you do yell, it carries more weight. So he was shivering by the time I was done. Like he saw I was really upset. There have to be certain lines that the kids, they understand. It's not, they can't cross that. Now, did I sit there and explain to him, do you know what could happen if you open the door to a stranger? No, I don't think you don't want the kids to go around in fear. They have to know. They're not allowed to open the door without their parents' permission until they're a certain age, right? On the other hand, when my son had the hernia, so we went to the doctor, and every time we come to the doctor, pull down your pants, and the doctor checks, right? So you go to one doctor, you go to a second doctor, you go to a third doctor till they decide to operate. So it was a good opportunity to tell him, you know, that's your private area, and only Abba and Ima are allowed to touch that. No one else is. Now that we're telling you, the doctor is going to check you there. So then the doctor is going to check you there. But otherwise, you know that no one else is supposed to touch it. And if someone does, you come and tell us. You didn't do anything wrong if someone does. And that's important to tell them, because one of the tactics that people use when they do molest children is that they tell the kid like they did something terrible, and if they tell their parents, they'll never love them again. It's a standard tactic that they use. It's important to tell the kid, you didn't do anything wrong if someone does it, but you should tell your parents. You should tell us. And then we try to set limits. We try to set guidelines. If guys will lift my kids, then I'll try to tell them, do me a favor, don't pick up the kids. Now, it's not that I suspect any specific guy, but it's not right for my kids. You have to figure, you guys, there's a turnover here where every 6 months we have a whole slew of new faces here. So how many uncles could my kids have? You know, to you, you already know them. But to them, every 6 months, there's a whole new series of faces coming to our Shabbos table. So one of the guidelines that I have, and I've been contemplating writing guidelines for all new guests. I haven't yet decided if it's nice or not nice to give all the Mahon Meir guys before they come for a Shabbos meal. One of the things that I tell guys, if it's relevant, is please don't pick up the kids. Because the kids have to have this concept, there's family, and then there's strangers. And as much as we like having guys over, but they do have to have perspective that a guy that they just met can't just pick them up. I understand that my kids are friendly and guys are happy to play with them, but from the kid's perspective, what are you doing to the kid? You're not going to be around in 2 years. You're not his uncle for real. He's happy to play with you, but there has to be some kind of limit. So I'll gently ask a guy if he lifts the kid, please don't lift him again. It's not that I'm thinking he's doing something improper, but my kids have to have perspective. These are the type of things that you have to think about, and you could do it without scaring the kids. They don't have to know what the possibilities are. Sometimes they just have to know the guidelines. David, clear enough? Like, I'm not going there. I'm not explaining to my kid what can happen. But I might tell him, you know, if there's only the gender in the bathroom, so you wait till there are other kids in the bathroom, or wait till the gender's out before you use it. And one of the things I'll do is I'll check with my son every few weeks that the guy who's taking him to school never stops off anywhere. And I'll check with him that he's never alone with the Rebbe. And by the way, he doesn't know what I'm checking for. As I'm talking to him, I'm interested in hearing what's going on in his life. I'm asking him about other things, who his friends are, and what he's playing. And among other things, I'm also going to ask him every so often kids have an inflammation in the bris milah area. It's normal. Kids will every so often have an inflammation, and if you put on Vaseline, it goes away. So sometimes, as I'm putting on the Vaseline, I'll remind him, you know, no one else is supposed to be touching here. Has anyone ever touched you here? I'll ask him point blank. You know,
even 3-4 years down the road, it can inflame.
Yeah, long after the birth, there's because the skin is bent over, like the skin.
Right.
So sometimes a little dirt, you can have an inflammation of the skin. It's normal. You could have it in other parts of your body too. It has nothing to do with the bris. It has to do with the area. The organ can sometimes have skin inflammation.
Once they get older, that can still happen.
Any person can have that. Any person can have it. With kids, it's more frequent. But it's. I'm just saying. So there are things that you can ask and you could teach kids without scaring them. They don't have to understand everything that's all about. They have to understand there are norms. Strangers shouldn't be touching you, and there's an area that no one should be touching you, including cousins, including uncles and aunts. And there are certain norms which the kids have to understand. And part of the norms is also you have to teach your kids that there are people who didn't learn about Torah. So when a kid sees a car driving in the street, you don't have to tell them, yeah, they're all going to the hospital, they're all pregnant ladies giving birth. Come on, why lie? Tell a kid, there are people, they didn't have the good fortune that you have, that their parents didn't teach them what it means to keep Shabbos. There's nothing wrong, let them understand, and that's it. And you could tell them, don't you feel bad for them? They don't know. And that's it. There's no...
I think that it takes multiple decades to understand how men work. And a girl under 30 doesn't really understand how do you set guidelines for a female your age rather than just for children? Like, oh, he's a good guy, don't worry about it.
Let's discuss it Thursday night, just because we're really short on time. It's a point that needs to be discussed, but it'll take up the rest of class time. So let's next week Thursday we'll have time. Yeah.
This goes back you said it when it comes to a driver, you are willing to pay less. Okay, we live in a country, in a land which majority of the people are Jewish, and we can't really distinguish from one another. So, but why really Dafka doing it on purpose? I'm not talking about you, I'm talking about in general situation, giving much less money than he's asking.
That's a way of getting him to say the no, not me. By asking the Arab driver for a cheap price, I'm hoping he'll tell me no, forget it. And that way I didn't offend him. If he thinks I'm stupid, he drives off, and then I could continue with the next thing.
I don't want to go too much on a tangent, but how do you judge favorably when, you know, do you assume they're all Arab Christians or someone with an emergency? Or
no, I think it's the truth that most people didn't learn differently. Right. You know, and I'll tell you the honest truth. I don't know what drove you to Judaism or to observancy, but I was born here. It's much easier. I don't know where I'd be if I weren't born here. I have to be. I'm being honest with myself too. Truth is, I have it very easy. This is where I was born. This is what I learned. It's easier. If I'm real with myself, and I think most people have, there are a lot of things that push us in the direction that we go. There's very little credit we could take for ourselves, and they didn't have all those things pushing them there. They grew up, their parents might have taught them the exact opposite. Yeah, that's some old stuff, you know, when there were tribes out in the desert, they did this. Now we're modern Jews, we don't do this. We're, you know, there are all kinds of things that people grow up with, and they don't know any different. So I'm not sure it's their fault. I'm really not sure it's their fault. When I'm telling my son that, I mean it. I feel bad for them that they don't know better, but I'm telling him the truth. Okay, I want to do two Mishnayos each night, so let's try to quickly do the next Mishnah and then go over to Shmuel. Mishnah Vav, Yoshua ben Prachem Nita Abadi Kiblu Mehem, Yoshua ben Prachem Nita Arbeli from the city of Arbel. They received the tradition from them. Yoshua ben Prachem Omer, Yoshua ben Prachem says, oh boy, okay, this is a packed Mishnah. Okay, we'll try to do it in short. Aseh l'charav, make for yourself a Rebbe. Even if he's not the chief rabbi of Israel, even if he's not the biggest town Chacham, at the end of the day, you have to have a rabbi. And this is one of the big things that will help you have peace in the home too. Don't you always be the one to call the shots. You have a rabbi, you call him, you ask him. And I always say, try to find a rabbi that your wife is comfortable with, because most of the time, most of the shaylos affect your wife more than you. If the rabbi says you could make tuna fish on Shabbos or you can't make tuna fish on Shabbos, it affects her more than you. The rabbi says you do have to check the lettuce, you don't have to check the lettuce, it affects her more than you. The rabbi says you have to do certain stringencies and laws of family purity, most of the time it'll affect her, not you. The rabbi says the pot is kosher or not kosher, it'll affect her, not you. The rabbi says which hechsherim you could eat, which you can't eat, it's going to affect her more than you. She's doing most of the shopping. At the end of the day, 95% of the questions that come up in married life affect her more than you. And that's why I think when you choose the rabbi, try to find someone that you're both comfortable with, but I give more weight for her to be comfortable than you, because it will affect her. Uknei lecha chaver, acquire a friend. And even if it involves investment, being that our class is focused on the Jewish home, so your best friend should be your wife. You will need friends of your own gender. At the end of the day, you do. A man needs his men friends, and his woman needs her woman friends. But when you first get married, invest in that friendship, even if it's at the cost of other friendships. Put the rest of life on pause. When we got married, the morning after the wedding, 8 o'clock in the morning, or 7 o'clock, I don't remember, the phone rings. I'm like, huh? Who's calling? So I said, okay, I can respect that. I got on the phone, I answered the phone, and then I got on the voicemail. I was after davening, by the way. I put on the voicemail and I said, we got married in Teves. I said, thank you very much for calling. We're a little bit busy now. We will be returning calls on Tu B'Shvat. That's a half a month away. Tu B'Shvat came, I changed the voicemail and I said, thank you very much for calling. We'll be returning messages on Purim. That's a month away. Purim came, I got online, I said, thank you very much for calling. We'll be returning messages Pesach. Everyone got the message. All our friends realized we wanted no space, and no one expected a call back. And ever since then, for years, that was the joke. You'll call us back Pesach, right? But the message, it worked. You come home at night, the first year of marriage, or the first month or two, disconnect the phone, shut off the cell phones, have some time together, acquire the friend. It takes an investment. You can't become best friends in a minute. You guys just got married. I always say there are a few pieces of advice that every chatan came back to me and said, thank you, that was the best advice. One of them is this. The first month of marriage, you come home at night, disconnect all phones. Make a time. You come home 7 o'clock, 7:30, 8 o'clock, disconnect all phones. I would say the first 3 months. But no one's going to listen to me. Do the first month, and on your own, you'll add the next two. And every chatan I spoke to told me they did it. Every chatan I spoke to told me they did the first month, and after they saw how good it was to have the time for themselves at night, they added on their own. Some added a month, some added 2 months. But it's important. You have times that you shut the phone. So, k'nei lecha chaver, acquire a friend. You guys will have to have friends of your own genders, you and your wife. But at the same time, to acquire the friend, that's something which takes an investment. And the same thing with your wives. Devedant kol adam lekav zchut, and judge each person favorably. If it's a person that, as far as you know, is a good person, a kind person, you saw him do something and you could judge one of two ways, judge favorably. And in marriage, this is maybe the pivotal point of preventing any little argument from exploding. I think every argument at the root of the argument is the claim, you don't care for me. If you cared for me, you wouldn't have done that. If you really cared, you wouldn't have allowed yourself to do A, B, or C. And that automatically causes every argument to be an explosion. You know, I can't handle you not caring. I could handle a mistake, but I can't handle you not caring. So I think at the root of every argument, every misunderstanding has to be this. Judge the other person favorably. And you could even begin by saying it. If you could force yourself to say it, you've already crossed half the road. You can begin by saying, I know you wouldn't have done this if you knew how much it meant to me. I know you wouldn't have done this if you would have known how much it hurt me. You've already accomplished half the argument you've already solved. Now, it must be, I can't understand how you didn't know. I mean, I told you last week, that's not good. You've gone reverse, right? But you should know it did hurt me, so I'm hurt. You could even end it there. You know, you did A. I know you wouldn't have done it if you knew how much it hurt me, but you didn't. It hurt me. Now, what's the other side going to say? Whatever they say, you've already crossed half the road. The second you begin with that understanding, if you could knock that into yourself and force yourself even to verbalize it, and half the time you're going to tell yourself, no, but I'm willing to bet half the time, look, 99% of the times our spouses do not want to hurt our feelings and we don't want to hurt theirs. Sometimes, no, I wanted to stay for one more inning or whatever it was, and I wasn't focused and I didn't realize the time ticked or whatever. We're all human, but we have to realize that there's almost never malicious intent. So Vedant Kol Adam Nekav Zchut involves many things. It really involves its own class, how to judge the other person favorably. But for now, we'll try to take this message. And if you want more messages, go listen to the other Binyan HaBayit classes. We've discussed this at length.